Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. This is Emma Lugo, one of the co-hosts of Prison Pipeline. And we are here tonight with Amy Sitars, who worked on the Bronze Shoe Project and has done a lot of work on immigrant detention and immigrant rights. Welcome to Prison Pipeline, Amy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So tonight we're going to be talking about, you know, a really challenging subject. We're going to be talking some more about what's going on with immigrant rights right now in this country, what's going on with the whole issue of the detention of children and the separation of children from their families of origin. As many of you know, beginning with the recent Trump administration, there's been kind of a ramp up of activities with ICE, with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and we've been building concentration camps on the border of the United States to detain vast warehouses of people who are seeking a better life and are trying to find their way into this country for some hope of economic opportunity. And one of the cruelest things that the current administration has done has they've chosen to, beginning about a year and a half ago, they began to choose to separate children from their families. And throw them into various systems, often just putting them in other camps, separated from their families. And this is all part of a policy of the United States government to engage in particularly vicious cruelty on the backs of people of color and poor people. And so we're going to be talking about what kind of a country are we living in right now. And since this is Prison Pipeline, we're going to be focusing a lot on the issue of detention. And Amy is one of many, many people in Portland who has been working nonstop and with vigilance, working in the past with Occupy ICE, right now with a march that's going on for immigrant justice, with the Bronze Shoes Project and many other things. So Amy, welcome to Prison Pipeline. Let's start. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, please. I know you've been on KBOO before.
I am a local artist and activist for human rights. I have been in Portland since 93. I just started really heavily into activism in the last year and a half. And I've just been fighting for the rights of the undocumented community here in Portland.
So how did you hear about, organizing that was going on around the undocumented community, especially with Occupy ICE? How did you get involved in that?
When the camp was there last June, July, and that was about the time when they started, the media started showing us the kids being separated from their parents at the border, and the crisis kind of came to the mainstream media. I had a very heavy heart. When I was born, my mother gave me up for adoption, and the people that adopted me 2 years later gave me back. And then 6 months later, my mom passed away, and I was given to another family to raise. And so when I saw the children being stripped from their parents and held in cages, and I don't have a visual memory of a lot of those things that happened when I was so young, but my body remembers. And so when I saw that happening, I just, my heart was breaking, and I just felt, breathless and kind of overwhelmed. And so I kind of composed myself, and I knew that I had to do something. And so as an artist, I thought of a way to have a passive resistance, a peaceful resistance. And I came up with the shoe idea because back in the day when people would bronze their baby shoes, they did it because they wanted to preserve a memory, and they a precious memory of their children. And so I made 100 bronze shoes and hung them on the fence directly across from the ice building facing the entrance. And that was where it all started.
So the very first one was actually a performative act that was meant to convey a message directly to to people who were both detained and also to people who were detaining and imprisoning, as well as to occupiers.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of to put it in the face of the people working at ICE. This is what you're doing. And the shoes serve as a reminder to us and to their families that their children are precious and we won't forget about them. We'll just keep fighting.
Mm-hmm. So have you had a chance to meet any children or have any discussions or conversations with people involved in the movement about the detention of immigrant children? I know that you've been doing a lot of work and you've thought a lot about this. I remember the first time I really heard about it was actually when Senator Merkley was down at the border. And actually, I heard about it before that. Unfortunately, I heard about it before that. I heard that in Portland, they were actually shipping children to Portland and they were being held by a local agency, which I will not name because I'm on the air right now, but gotcha. They were being held by a local agency that and that they were like going to be let's talk about the trajectory of one of these children just so that the public kind of understands what's going on, because I think a lot of people don't even people don't know what's really going on, because it's still happening. Like, that's another thing, is that people think it's over with.
That, and that it has been happening for decades. This isn't a new thing that families have been separated. It's been happening for a long time. I do know that when, say, the children were shipped here and held, oftentimes, let's say someone in Florida gets a call and they say, oh, we have your child. They won't say where. And it takes months sometimes for them to actually get their children back who are, say, in Portland. You know, they have no idea where they are. They're far, far away. They're not anywhere near, you know, where the parents live. And they often make them do DNA tests in order to get their child back.
Which doesn't account for children who come to the country with someone who's been either designated by the family as a caregiver to help them on the journey.
Right.
Or by someone who is a family of choice.
Right. Even a cousin or an uncle. Right now they're saying that, you know, that doesn't count as a family member. So they separate them without, caring who they're with, really.
So let's talk about the trajectory of one of these children. Let's just say we have a hypothetical child that we're talking about. They've taken a long journey. Maybe from somewhere in Central America. And it takes several months often to make the journey through Mexico, through all of the states of Mexico. They're stopping in safe houses along the way. They have to pay bribes. Sometimes they're getting trafficked. They have to do a lot of involuntary labor. And because of how U.S. immigration policy has been crafted in the last three or four decades, they end up somewhere in the Sonoran Desert, because the Sonoran Desert is one of the only places left where there's even a remote possibility or hope of actually crossing the border and getting into, you know, a country like where maybe their maybe where the rest of their family is already here, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe they're the only one mm-hmm. and the rest of their family is back wherever they're from. Mm-hmm. And this is their one hope, you know. Mm-hmm. And so... but anyways, so let's say they're going with their family and they make this long journey through the desert, you know, with very little water, very little food, usually being smuggled by coyotes, mm-hmm. And they make it to the border. And let's talk about what happens when they're separated. How does that go?
Well, not being directly involved with that, I can't say specifically, but... they are separated because it is not legal under Trump's zero tolerance policy to have a minor housed with an adult. So they just house them separately or put them in cages separately. And sometimes they never see their family members again. Sometimes they're put in foster homes. Sometimes Americans adopt them and the parents never see them again or can't legally get them back. They're housed in awful, horrible conditions. Mm-hmm.
So the policy is a zero tolerance policy in terms of like, well, zero, that doesn't even make any sense anyways. What on earth does that even mean?
Right.
It seems like it's like Orwellian speak, really, mm-hmm. because what they're really saying is that they have no tolerance for families.
Right. Exactly.
They have no tolerance for the bonds that like hold people together in the most fundamental primal way that human beings have always been held together. Mm-hmm. And so they're like tearing that apart.
Right.
That's what they're doing.
Right.
And so you just listed at least six or seven different possible trajectories that happen to these children. And we're talking, and also you made a really great point that I think I would like to like repeat. And that's that this policy has been going on since before the Trump administration. This was happening in the past. Do you know anything about the history of the policy, like how it's been utilized in the past, when it's been utilized?
Well, the zero tolerance policy is his own signature policy. Under Obama, families were still being separated, but there just wasn't this policy. So Trump is just taking advantage of something that was already in place and making it worse, and continues to create policies that reject people's human rights. I don't know a lot about the history of the details of family separation. I just know that it's been happening for a long time and we just haven't heard about it.
And as an artist, you were moved to do something about this.
Yes, and I continue to. The Bronze Shoes Project is an ongoing project. And so, unfortunately, I started hanging shoes all over the city and also sending them to people out of state. And then anyone traveling, I will, push shoes on them and say, please hang them wherever you go. To keep it in the forefront of people's minds, because, we go through our days and, we drive to work, we come home, we look at social media and scroll through and watch TV and don't act.
Right.
Or don't even think outside of our own little safety bubble.
It's easy to forget that there is concentration camps on the border and that there's families that are being separated. There was an action about 3 weeks ago down at the ICE headquarters here in Portland. And it was nice to see something being revived. Occupy ICE was a really powerful encampment. It was, were you involved in Occupy ICE at all?
I was. Occupy ICE spurred a nationwide movement, which is amazing. And it just brought a lot of attention to what's going on and, called people to action and called officials out on their behavior. And I started organizing for them a little bit after the camp was swept, and just tried to continue to do some actions that kept these horrible things that are happening in people's faces, in government, local governments, officials' faces, like, hey, you guys need to push for more, push to end this, push to stop this, go up to a higher level of government and say, we don't stand for this.
Mm-hmm. So as an artist, I'd like to talk to you for just a few minutes about some of the tools that you use, the craft that you use to help get this message across. You specifically chose shoes, and you brought in a set of shoes that we can't really see, but we can describe them to help people understand what the Bronze Shoes Project is about. So what I'm holding in my hand is three bronze shoes that are all children's shoes, and there's a note attached to it, and the note says, "These bronze shoes represent the children separated by ice. They serve as a reminder to all of us, to their families, that they are precious and we will never forget them." So tell me, how did this idea come to you of doing these shoes?
At first I had the idea or thought or feeling to bring something to them, like bring something that showed my deep, deep care for the situation. And I just got a whole bunch of shoes, and I didn't quite know what to do with them, and I just had them in a pile on the floor. And I thought, I need more. Like, I don't have enough. Like, I need a lot of shoes. And so I kind of sat with that for a little bit, and then one day I was just walking down the stairs, and suddenly he had this idea, what if I bronzed them? Because that is a symbol of like how precious these children are, and how bronze shoes were to preserve a memory, so that when you looked at them, you would remember this precious memory of a precious human being. And so it just kind of came out of midair.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me when I've been to the Holocaust Museum. Have you ever been to the Holocaust Museum in D.C.? And one of the most powerful exhibits in the Holocaust Museum is the shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been quite a few projects with shoes in the past. There was in 2017, I believe, on the Capitol lawn, they put somewhere near seven, I can't remember exactly how many, but the exact number of shoes was the number of children that had been killed in mass shootings at schools since Sandy Hook.
Mm-hmm.
There was also one in on the Danube River along the banks. An artist made a bunch of iron shoes, and they represent the Jews who were shot and killed, and their bodies fell into the river, and their shoes were left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So shoes are a powerful symbol, and mm-hmm. and these are children's shoes specifically. So,
mm-hmm.
and then you bronze them, you said, because it represents the preciousness of that.
Mm-hmm.
The sense that when you see something that's been bronzed, it represents a precious memory.
Yeah, and we don't want to forget about what's going on. You know, we don't want to forget about these children's parents who are searching for them. And
mm-hmm. And a lot of them still are, unfortunately.
A lot of them.
It's hard to even part of how a community is rendered invisible and created, like, made powerless. This is something that we talk a lot about on Prison Pipeline, because one of the strategies of mass incarceration is to render, like, whole sections of the community powerless. You know, for instance, African American men.
Mm-hmm.
There's been this long ongoing, you know, war against the African American men in this culture, and it's continued from slavery through Jim Crow into mass incarceration. It's an institution that is meant to render, like, any expression of power mm-hmm. by that community invisible. And so mass incarceration is a way of, like, making people not present, really turning them into non-entities, like, within their own
right.
communities, within their own culture. And so, you know, and that's one of the ways of, like, masking the ugliness of the kind of society that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I'm wondering, like, from that perspective, how do you think that strategy is working with them?
It's working by creating fear mm-hmm. in the communities. You know, the fear of even going outside your own home because you could be snatched up by ICE. Fear that you can't stand up for your own rights. You know, fear that your family will be separated. I think that is what paralyzes the community. And it's a terrible, terrible tact. I mean, it's awful.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that it's happening. So this fear is really being projected on both sides of the border too. Mm. It's something that when it first started happening, I saw it happening here in the United States when we started reading reports and seeing stories about what was going on in communities here in Oregon, out in Hillsborough, down in Clackamas County, where entire cities that used to be really vibrant and had lots of street life and, you know, had like really vibrant communities of people, like all of a sudden everyone went into hiding. Mm-hmm. And people were afraid. And, you know, we heard stories. I mean, we heard so many stories of fathers who had lived here for 25 years, getting detained. We heard stories about people seeking sanctuary in our churches. Mm-hmm. We've heard, you know, stories about ICE coming up and trying to utilize law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And we've heard all of those stories. I mean, all of these stories were some of the stories that were shared during the encampment last year. Mm-hmm. And they're stories that we're still sharing now. And part of the reason that I'm having you on right now is because this whole issue has not gone away. Mm-hmm. Nothing has changed. People are still trying to come to this country because they don't have hope, and this is some place where they're coming for hope,
right? And they're, you know, they're often seeking refuge from a situation that is incredibly violent, and if they were to be sent back, they, you know, they could be killed. If I have a friend who has to do check-ins at ICE, and his little girls every time get physically ill the day of, before the day of, they'll go to school and, you know, completely break down and be anxious and crying, and he'll have to go get them and then take them with him to ICE, just to, you know, I'm right here. And it's just a terrible thing for these little kids to have to deal with, because that kind of trauma doesn't leave you ever.
It's trauma that we carry through generations.
It
is. If we live that long.
And I mean, if a parent is to be detained and then deported, oftentimes the rest of the family will move back to wherever they came from. And these kids don't know anything about that country, and it's often violent. They don't have the same opportunities, you know. It's just a really horrible situation.
Yeah, if they're lucky enough to even get there. I mean, right. To me, so many of the stories of what we're hearing right now really reminds me of stories of what happened in, you know, in Germany, like in the 1920s and the 1930s, to like whole groups of ethnic minorities, you know, including Jews, who lived with that same kind of fear. But anyways, we've only got about 5 minutes left, so I want to get to what you're doing right now, Amy. First of all, let's finish talking about the Bronze Shoe Project for a minute. Where is it right now? Are you still doing it? Where can people find out about it?
Yeah, there's a Facebook page, the Bronze Shoes Installation Project. Recently, I had a bunch at a farmer's market, the Mississippi Street Farm stand, where people could come and just get shoes so that they could hang them. I'm going to the border actually on the 18th, and I'm going to pack as many as I can in my suitcase down in San Diego, on the California-Mexico border, and I'm just going to hang as many as I can.
Do you think the Border Patrol will keep them up? Or
no way.
But they'll be there for a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to find some really strategic places.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. So if people want to find out about the Bronze Shoes, they can go. You've got a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And how many, do you know how many you've given away so far? How many?
Oh my gosh.
A lot.
A lot. Yeah. There's a lot out there.
Yeah. They're all over town.
Yep.
Yeah. And they're kind of like, you can sort of hang them like, you can hang them almost like, I don't know.
A tree.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You can put them anywhere, and they're a way of remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And do they all come with a little tag?
They do. Yeah.
So people can read about it.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. So let's talk about what you're doing right now. I know you're helping to organize for a march that's coming up. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm part of an affinity group that is off of Extinction Rebellion. And we are doing an action in response to the youth global climate strike. And the event is called Climate Strike for Immigrant Justice. And we're bringing to people's attention the link between climate change and migration. And we're going to be marching across the Hawthorne Bridge in two separate groups and meeting in the middle. And we have like an 8-foot globe cut in half. And so each group will be led by that. One side will represent climate. One side will represent immigration. And the immigration side will be carrying butterflies, and the climate side will be carrying umbrellas, and we're going to attach the butterflies to the railing of the bridge and the umbrellas to the bottom hanging towards the river. And then we're going to march down and rally on the waterfront with music and speakers and just kind of a celebration, but also educating people about the links and the...
Great. And that's September 22nd?
Yes, Sunday at noon.
Sunday at noon. And if people want to get involved in that, how can they get involved in it?
Check out the event page on Facebook, Climate Strike for Immigrant Justice. There's a poll where you can sign up for the east side or the west side of the bridge. We have 100 butterflies and 100 umbrellas, so we need a lot of people.
That's great. So it's a way of like linking two different issues that people don't necessarily think are connected.
Exactly.
But this whole issue of like immigrant detention, like this, the mass migrations that happen that like end up becoming part of this discussion, have an origin in climate issues. So that's great. Is there any kind of, do you think that by working across two different kind of areas of organizing, are there any like fertile kind of new conversations that happen? I mean, like people who are the people who are doing ecological organizing, are they different from people who are doing organizing around immigrant justice? Do you think there's new conversations happening because of that collaboration?
Yeah, I think so. Something that I have noticed is the climate groups aren't necessarily, some of them, not all of them, aren't necessarily as experienced in fighting for the undocumented people. And that's something that you have to be very, very careful about, not putting them in danger, keeping them safe, teaching them to know their rights. And so there are so many situations in rallies and actions like this that you have to think about, we want that community to come out because this is their revolution and they are going to lead it, you know, and so we have to make it comfortable and safe for them to be out here fighting.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming down to KBOO tonight to talk a little bit about this. I don't know where we're going to be going with the whole issue of immigrant detention. I think it's going to take some really radical actions. I feel like Occupy ICE was a great start, but we're going to have to keep it up because there's so many people being detained right now on the border, and there's people still coming, and there's we don't even know how many children are separated.
Right.
We have no idea. We don't know where they are because the government's not telling us. And so there's all of these unknowns. And so unfortunately, during really dark times like this, projects like yours with the Bronze Shoe Project are one of the only ways of like keeping some kind of a visible marker on where the children are. Mm-hmm. You know, where are these children who have been imprisoned, separated from their parents, shipped around the country? And where are their parents?
Right.
You know, so thank you so much for like helping to raise awareness about these issues. And you know, best of luck with all of your continued work. Thank you so much for being there for
the
community.
Thank you.
We've been talking tonight with Amy Sitars, who is the originator of the Bronze Shoe Project, a way of raising awareness about the detention of immigrant children. You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week. Great, thank you so much.
Baby, really appreciate you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Don't let me be misunderstood.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. Please join us this year at Mic to the People, our annual election meeting. Do you want to help steer KBOO in a positive direction this fall? Plan on attending the annual election meeting, Mic to the People, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater and make your voice heard. Cast your vote by 1 p.m. at the event and enjoy refreshments and live entertainment with local musicians West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. Hear a report back from your board of directors and get to know this year's candidates. Record your fondest memories of KBOO in a minute or less at the Mic to the People booth. This is an all-ages and disability-affirmative event. Again, that's the annual election meeting, Mic to the People, Saturday, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, featuring West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. More information can be found at kboo.fm/meeting2019. Remember, your voice matters.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host the 10th anniversary of Right to Survive on Thursday, September 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The Right to Survive 10th anniversary celebration will celebrate the Shelter for All movement, participation of Right to Dream 2, and Right to Survive.